Americans take 25 tons of aspirin every day, which amounts to 2 1/4 tablets for every man, woman, and child in the United States. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts about pains and pills. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. One day in 1899, a man stepped off a streetcar in New York City and was struck and killed by a horseless carriage. That first traffic fatality marked the beginning of a carnage which now exceeds annually by far the victims of two world wars. In one year alone, twice as many Americans were injured in automobile accidents as were wounded in 5 years of World War II, which was our bloodiest war to date. If America's $11 billion annual economic loss from traffic accidents were spread equally, every family would get a bill for $208. Now, these alarming statistics of slaughter on the highways constitute only a part of the overall picture of physical loss and suffering that afflicts our 20th century like some incurable plague. In spite of tremendous advances in medical research and new discoveries for prolonging human life, the fact remains that 1 out of 8 Americans will be in a hospital sometime during this year as a patient. We are not a nation of healthy citizens by any means. At least 75 million Americans have chronic illnesses of smaller or greater degree, and that's more than a third of our total population. It seems passing strange that one of the most deadly diseases continues to rampage and destroy life with increasing force. I'm talking, of course, about cancer, which continues to increase as a killer of every age group. Now, I'm not going to dwell on the well-known facts of lung cancer, which destroys more than 120,000 people every year. Suffice it to say that this deadly statistic would be almost entirely eliminated if the American public had the simple moral purpose and strength of will to quit smoking cigarettes. Should time last, and should America change its course soon enough to survive, future generations will probably look back on this mass suicide smoking age as the most unbelievable in world history. Probably there has never been a period since time began when so many people, with such full knowledge of what they were doing, followed a course of self-destruction. When life means so little that a person prefers to smoke and die rather than live, we're far along the road that ancient Rome followed long before us. Now, this cancer smoking picture is more than a physical dilemma for those who choose lingering pain and death. It's also a moral problem. God's Word says this in 1 Corinthians 3:16-17. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Now please notice that those who defile and destroy their own bodies are sinning against God and will be punished for that sin by being destroyed. There's no question about this point, friends. The Bible speaks with clarity and conviction. If human language has any meaning at all, we can understand the Word of God on this. Now, in the Old Testament, God often accused his people of being destroyed for lack of knowledge and held them guilty of not searching to know the truth. But, friends, today we face a situation that's far worse. What must the God of heaven think as he looks down on an indulgent generation of weak-willed transgressors of their own bodies who do have a perfect knowledge of what they're doing, and yet they do it? With all the terrifying facts of lung cancer before them, millions continue to invite death by the dubious pleasure of burning out their lungs. Why do they do it? This is a question that goes begging for an answer. The amazing fact is that this soft generation prefers to indulge its perverted appetite than to exert the effort and will to curb any fleshly pleasure, even if lingering torment and death will be the result. But now, let's consider another aspect of the cancer problem. Even with the astronomical rise of lung cancer, the fact remains that 1/3 of all cancers of the human body occur in the stomach, and 1/2 of all cancers are found in the organs of digestion, including the liver, pancreas, small intestine, and colon. Now, friends, the reason for this cancer concentration must be obvious to all of us. Except for those who bombard their lungs with hot tobacco tars, the stomach is the most abused organ of the body. Dr. James Ewing, one of the founders of the American Cancer Society, made this statement in a tract entitled The Prevention of Cancer. He said, "The perpetual abuse of a normal stomach frequently gives rise to cancer, and an abnormally weak stomach may suffer the same fate from less abuse. In both instances, abuse and overfunction must be regarded as the exciting cause. The stomach is not lined with copper, but by a single row of rather delicate epithelial cells. The sole safe conclusion to be drawn from these data is that all forms of abuse of the stomach must be avoided if the high mortality from this very common disease is to be reduced." End of quotation. Well, friends, I can tell you it's simply hair-raising and blood-curdling to see what goes into the stomachs of American men, women, and children. The great test seems to be whether it tastes good or else whether it gives a pleasant after-effect. No wonder 50% of the population is suffering from obesity and that $300 million is spent every year on diet formulas and exercise gadgets. No wonder also that 25 tons of aspirin are swallowed every day in the United States of America. According to the National Observer, this is 2 1/4 tablets for every man, woman, and child in the nation. And that's every day, friends. If you didn't get your 2 1/4 tablets today, somebody else got a double supply. You can be sure of that. And now, let's take a look at the acid-forming, irritating effects of concentrated sweets. One of the largest exhibits at the 1962 World's Fair in Seattle was a huge cake, 2 stories high, 60 feet in circumference, weighing 25,000 pounds, and that's 12.5 tons. This cake contained 2 tons of cane sugar. Now, was not this cake symbolic of America's huge sweet tooth? Back in 1840, our average annual consumption of sugar in the United States was 10 pounds per person. In 1940, the average consumption of sugar had soared to 100 pounds. In other words, it had gone up by 10 times. And in 1960, it had climbed to 110 pounds, besides 1 gallon per person of liquid sweets, such as honey and molasses. Allowing for the lighter weight of children, we adults consume our own weight in sugar every 12 months. That's the present rate of consumption. In the Journal of American Dental Association, this statement appeared, quote, "The dental profession and other interested agencies have a responsibility to warn the public of the carcinogenic properties of sugar and their solutions, and to point out that many of these products contain no highly important nutritional factors." End of quotation. Now, what they're saying is that there are cancer-producing properties in the sweets. Patricia McCormick wrote, "America's sweet tooth is bulging near jaw-breaking proportions. Filling the craving for sweets now amounts to $1 billion a year business, and during the last 12 months, the per capita consumption of candy hit 18.5 pounds. All right, let's look at something else now. The ice cream freezer was invented by Nancy Johnson in 1846. An ice cream was first made and sold commercially by Jacob Fussell in Baltimore in 1851. In that year, 15,000 gallons was consumed. In the year 1900, the people of the United States consumed 5 million gallons. In 1956, the amount had soared to 651 million gallons, besides 36 million gallons of frozen sherbet. In 1960, the consumption of ice cream had risen to 700 million gallons, and frozen sherbet to 41.5 million gallons. Now, these figures were supplied by the International Association of Ice Cream Manufacturers, which declare also, quote, "Ice cream is the supreme ruler of many a palate." Well, we can certainly agree with that. But has ice cream displaced our brains to become the supreme ruler of our palate? Much of this ice cream is eaten on an empty stomach and between meals. If indulged at all, these frozen dainties should be taken only at mealtime and in modest quantity, and then admixture with other foods would dilute the concentration of sugar and warm it up a little. There's not a digestive juice in the body that can even begin the digestion of any food that's that cold. Now, I can almost hear some conscientious, serious-minded youth exclaim, "But listen, can't we have any pleasure? Can't we have any good times? Can't we have any fun?" Yes, indeed. It's right for youth and their elders to have pleasure, to have a good time, but not that kind of good time that destroys your health while having it. Christian young people are the happiest young people in the world. They have satisfying joy to which other youth are strangers. Good times with no aftermath of corroding hangovers, violent headaches, jittery nerves, rebelling stomachs, restless nights, stinging regrets, and bitter remorse. One of the adversary's most formidable weapons against us is ridicule. We all like to be accepted by our crowd. We don't like to be different, to be peculiar, to be an oddball. Youth is decoyed by the words, "Oh, come on, don't be a sissy, don't chicken out, don't be a killjoy, don't be a square." What? You don't smoke, you don't drink, you don't chew, you don't dope? Everybody's doing it. Once can't hurt you. Can't you have any pleasure? Can't you have any fun? Yeah, we hear those words all the time, and it's pretty hard to resist pressures like that from the crowd. Can't have any fun. Strange fantasy, friends. Fascinating mirage. Or could it be just a fatal delusion? Is there no fun except in fetters that shackle you? Is there no pleasure except in habits that enslave you? Is there any fun in the gripping pain of a coronary attack? Is there any delight in the terrifying delusions of delirium tremors? Is there true satisfaction in vices which may open up to you the gates to federal prison, or give you the fatal disease of AIDS? Is there any thrill in a leap to suicide? It takes but one step to determine direction. How much is it worth to be well? How much would it be worth to postpone for 10, 20, or 30 years beyond the expected lifespan that last lonely one-way ride to the cemetery, friends? Yes, we may expect ridicule, but don't be laughed out of your principles or into an untimely grave. A Christian doctor just recently, at the age of 82, wrote a book on health. I'd like to quote from that book in closing the broadcast today. He said, quote, "During my medical student days at the University of Colorado, I was written up in the student annual as Deacon Truman, our sky pilot. At the president's banquet, given in honor of our graduating class, they had a gay time. Sparkling wines and proof spirits flowed freely. Of course, I refused to imbibe, which surprised no one. Then came the big tray loaded with various brands of cigarettes and cigars. Again, I refused the president's treat. A booming voice shouted, 'Truman, you don't smoke?' I replied, 'No, I don't smoke.' 'And you don't drink?' 'No, I don't drink either.' 'Well, do you eat hay? You wouldn't make company for either man or beast.' And then, of course, was the big laugh. It was all in fun, but not so funny for the goat, me. However, I had the respect and friendship of every member of my class and could have lost both had I wilted under that ridicule. Last June, we attended the 50-year Golden Jubilee celebration of the University of Colorado, honoring the 50th year graduating class and all previous graduating classes of the university. It was the 57th anniversary of my class. I looked about and inquired at the alumni office in Denver, where the medical school is located. Also at the alumni office in Boulder, they had no record and no knowledge of any other surviving member of the 1908 graduating class in medicine. It seems I have the last laugh. Is the price tag too high? Oh, no. It's fun to keep fit." And so the doctor said, "Listen, you need to understand better about this subject, friends, and I want you to write for my little book entitled Death in the Kitchen. Death in the Kitchen. Write for it. It's free. A mailing address is Amazing Facts, Box 680, Frederick, Maryland, zip code 21701. Let me give that again now. Amazing Facts, Box 680, Frederick, Maryland, zip code 21701. When you write, be sure to ask for the book, Death in the Kitchen. That's Amazing Facts, Box 680, Frederick, Maryland, 21701. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.